On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When word first came that global media titan Rupert Murdoch was out to buy Dow Jones & Company and the Wall Street Journal, there was shock and awe in the news business. Here was the ruthless power politics mogul behind Fox News and a tabloid empire out to grab one of the crown jewels of American journalism. The Bancroft family that owns the Journal sniffed no, but Murdoch's $5 billion offer was huge, and today they're all talking. Critics are crying tragedy, but Murdoch has the cash. Up next on Point, Rupert Murdoch's earthquake bid for the Wall Street Journal. Joining me first today from New York is John Fine. He's media columnist for Businessweek magazine, has the latest on Rupert Murdoch's bid to grab the Wall Street Journal. John, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
So the family is sitting down with Rupert Murdoch himself today.
That's true. High noon is a reasonable way to describe it. They are meeting at noon with him. To back this up, Rupert made this bid in early May. Mm-hmm. Actually, he floated it to the family somewhat earlier, but it became known to everyone in early May. And thus far, they've resisted meeting with him. And what we've seen in the past several days is the family, basically the family moved a little bit. They went from saying, we're not interested in this bid, to saying, well, let's talk about it. And they gave a statement late last week that it de facto puts the company in play, announced that they were open to considering, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes right now, options. This could be a deal with Murdoch. This could be some sort of combination with somebody else.
The Bancrofts have owned Dow Jones for over 100 years. Their first response to this bid was, no, thank you, no way. But now they're at the table.
There was a little bit of nuance to that, actually. They didn't say, no, we're not going to do this. They basically said, not this. The nuance there is important because they didn't say, we are never selling to you, Rupert Murdoch, you horrible person. They're saying, right now this doesn't make sense, the assumption of a lot of people is that, someone like Rupert Murdoch doesn't make an offer without having a few extra bucks in his back pocket.
And I
think that's pretty much what's happening.
Look at those numbers with us for a second, John, because for all the hue and cry about journalistic integrity, it's a huge bid he's made here, and that is the slow, relentless pressure on this family.
Well, absolutely. I think I may get this off by my chronic amount, but at the time the bid was made public, Dow Jones stock was trading for approximately $36 a share. Rupert bid $60 a share. This is the kind of premium that really, it kind of makes people's eyeballs fall out. One very wise gentleman who does media deals for private equity said when he saw that, he said, we're just looking at all this going, wow, like, how can you possibly top this? And, this is in keeping with Rupert as being a very savvy deal maker. This is a deal that is very tough to turn down. And it certainly tends to get the attention of the family, and he certainly has that.
In business terms, media business terms, why would the Wall Street Journal, the Dow Jones Company, be worth nearly twice as much to Rupert Murdoch as to anyone else?
That's a really good question, and there's actually a number of ways to answer it. I guess you have to start, number one, with the fact that the business of Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal has never been quite good as, this sort of, it's, shall we say, brand equity. Mm-hmm. Last year, the sector that the Wall Street Journal is the major part of for Dow Jones, the publishing sector, posted something like a 3% profit margin. Hmm. This is absolutely microscopic in the context of newspapers. In previous years, they've lost money.
This in an industry where 20, 30, 40% have not been uncommon in years past, today.
For a large paper, like the Journal, probably, 15, 20%. Mm-hmm. But, point taken, very, 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 very subpar. And there's some good reasons for that. But there's also quite a few that have to do with generally the sense that the company's been poorly managed, that they've made some bad bets that didn't pan out, and they didn't make other bets that could have panned out very nicely.
So what could Rupert Murdoch do with it that they haven't done themselves?
Well, there's a sense that Rupert, for good or ill, knows how to manage media properties. He's done very well with newspapers historically. And so there's ways he can figure out what to do that the current management hasn't done. There is also the simple fact that Rupert has done a very good job, probably more than anyone else, of taking a media property and sort of getting some international juice out of it. Mm-hmm. This is always eluded the Wall Street Journal. Rupert's got extensive holdings in Europe and Asia, and there's conceivably some bad word alert synergies that could be squeezed out of this, or at least he can find ways to kind of promote it and make it happen a little better. And, you know, the other factor is that later this year, Rupert is launching a Fox Business Channel. And he's made no secret of his desire to have the Wall Street Journal play some part in that. What part in that is a little uncertain because the Wall Street Journal is currently locked up in a contract with CNBC. But, you know, there tend to be ways somehow to get around that.
There's a lot of talk about the possibility of the Bancroft saying, yes, we'll sell, but we want some material written guarantees that the editorial independence of the Wall Street Journal's news pages will be maintained. What about that?
Well, I mean, this is kind of an obvious thing that a family wants to do. And I think what we've seen in this sort of back and forth between the family and Murdoch thus far is that Murdoch is willing to grant some concessions, but his basic point is that if I'm buying this, you know, I'm not going to give up every ounce of control, which, you know, on a certain level is, you know, hard to dispute. There is an independent, when Rupert bought the Times of London mm-hmm. some years ago, he did set up a kind of, you know, partially independent board, I guess maybe a good way to characterize it. Actually, let me rephrase that. When he bought the Times of London, there was a board there that he maintained. So it's conceivable that there will be some kind of mechanism like that.
Though the editor there later wrote, editor at that time later wrote that, you know, that the Murdoch's promises were not worth the paper they're written on when it comes to editorial autonomy.
Evans, the editor, you know, ended up leaving, you know, in a bit of a huff over that. And, you know, if you get something, you tend to want to do something with it. I will say that I think it's incredibly naive to think that, you know, Rupert Murdoch comes in and he wants to make, you know, the Wall Street Journal into the Fox News Channel or the New York Post. I mean, he's savvy enough to realize that there is a value. The entire business proposition is in being not that. And I would also like to point out that, you know, in the 70s and 80s, Rupert Murdoch owned a strange left-wing newspaper called The Village Voice. And correct me if I'm mistaken, but The Village Voice did not exactly come out and endorse Ronald Reagan in the 80 and 84 elections.
Yeah, there are letters and howls pouring out of the Wall Street Journal newsroom, lots of them public. What are you hearing from you know, across the streets in New York there from Wall Street Journal staff, reporters?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, number one, it's always terrifying when your company gets bought, and it's really sort of I have the luxury of being able to look at this, you know, without the fear of major change coming down on my little head. But basically, you know, Rupert Murdoch, in a lot of ways, is still kind of seen as this, you know, ultra intense, you know, Visigoth. I mean, he's going to come, he's going to coarsen everything. He's going to make it this sort of screaming right wing rag. He's going to, you know. Ensure that his views, you know, get aired everywhere. I mean, this, of course, ignores the fact that the Wall Street Journal has an editorial page that's slightly to the right of Attila the Hun already, you know.
But there are those news pages to work with if a mogul wanted to.
There are those news pages to work with, but, you know, the news pages of the Times of London and the Australian, which is the big national paper in Australia, I mean, there's quite a bit of difference between the New York Post and Fox News and those properties.
John, we won't hold you to account on this exactly, but how does it feel to you? Is this a done deal?
I'm very leery of making predictions because, at a certain point on November 4th of 2004, I was telling everyone that John Kerry was president. So I'll back off somewhat. But the dynamics of this certainly seem to enormously favor Rupert Murdoch. It's really difficult, if not absolutely impossible, to find a publicly traded company in the same sort of space that could match this. This would be the New York Times, the Washington Post Company, even perhaps, dare I say, my own company, McGraw-Hill. And it's difficult to see a private equity group being able to make it happen just because the cash flow of Dow Jones is so low and the bid is so high relative to that. You know, that said, I mean, you know, there are quite a few billionaires in the world, and it's not completely insane to think that someone might come out of the woodwork, might be able to do some kind of minority stake deal that would make the family happy, give the shareholders that want to cash out some ability to do that. But one really has to see that the dynamics are strongly favoring Rupert Murdoch right now.
Well, there it is. The Wall Street Journal just inches now, perhaps, from the hands of Rupert Murdoch. John Fine, media columnist at Businessweek magazine. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I want to turn now to Robert McChesney. He joins us from Madison, Wisconsin, but he's professor of communications at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He was a media consultant and featured in the 2004 documentary Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. He's founder, president, and board chairman of Free Press, a media reform organization looking to keep media independent from corporate control. Robert McChesney, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
There is already much lamentation, and a deal is not even done, but the talks are underway today. What's at stake here, in your view?
Well, I think what's at stake is really how much diversity we're going to have in our news media going forward. Not that we have a great deal necessarily today in terms of ownership, but this will shrink the range because, you know, we currently have three national daily newspapers, The Times, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, four television networks, then maybe a handful of other newsrooms that serve the entire country, AP, Washington Post, just a couple others. So it's a really small number of players that actually do journalism that cover the whole country and make an effort to cover the world for Americans. And this will put two of them in one's hands.
Is it just the concentration that's got you worried, or is it those hands themselves, Rupert Murdoch's hands?
It's both, and I think it's important to distinguish. I'm glad you raised it that way, Tom, because, I mean, even if this were an owner that I personally admired, let's say Bill Moyers came into a vast fortune and owned Fox News and then was able to buy Wall Street Journal, I would oppose it on principle, something I'd be very concerned about. But then when you look at the person who is involved in it, it does make you even that much more concerned looking at his historical track record.
Because?
Well, I think what Rupert Murdoch said, and it's funny, when we talk about Fox News, we oftentimes think of its great contribution, so to speak, to American journalism is to increase the partisan nature of it and to take an explicitly political position. But in fact, I think in many ways what Rupert Murdoch did with Fox News that is every bit as important is that he really gutted the actual journalism.
He owns a lot already. The Fox Broadcasting Network, the 20th Century Fox Film Studio, HarperCollins, the book publisher, The Post in New York, The Weekly Standard, MySpace, DirecTV, a huge satellite television provider, five British newspapers, more than 110 in Australia, satellite television provider in Britain, Italy, and Asia. There's Rupert Murdoch now looking at the Wall Street Journal. What do you think? We've been joined from Madison, Wisconsin by University of Illinois Professor of Communications Robert McChesney. We're joined right now from New York by Zachary Carabel, Chief Economist and Chief Marketing Officer at the investment firm Fred Alger Management. They cover and invest in media operations. Zachary Carabel, thanks very much for being with us. You hear the hue and cry and moaning about this from journalism quarters. What do you think of the proposed deal?
Well, I mean, I'm sort of where John Fine was in that I think the hue and cry represents just generalized discomfort about this tectonic change in media and how media is transmitted and also how news is transmitted, but that the specifics of this concern as it applies to Rupert Murdoch is more likely than not significantly overblown.
What, you think this is just the Wall Street Journal crowd afraid of what the future holds technology-wise? But let me read to you. Here's there's just a lot of letters already in public, I'm sure much more in private. All of these addressed to the Bancroft family. Here's one from Scott Paltrow, investigative reporter with the Washington Bureau of the Journal, saying, you know, a democratic society depends in part for its existence on honest, conscientious journalism, exposing truth, shedding light in dark corners, calling government to account. He says, based on Mr. Murdoch's long and clear-cut record, we are convinced that this type of work will no longer be possible if the journal will to fall into our hands for the sake of what responsible journalism means to our country, he writes to the Bancrofts. We pray that you will have the continuing strength to stand firm. That's a pretty impassioned plea. It doesn't sound like it's about technology and distribution channels, Zachary Kimber.
Well, I'm not saying that people don't have really strong views and are concerned about Rupert Murdoch's track record and his willingness or lack thereof to allow for an editorial independence separate from his political views. But first of all, the Wall Street Journal is a bit of an ironic paper to raise this hue and cry about, because while it's certainly true that the news side of the Wall Street Journal has had a great deal of independence, it's equally true that the editorial side of the Wall Street Journal, which I think is at least as well known for, has been perhaps the most conservative public organ that has wide national reach in the United States. So, you know, the notion that Rupert Murdoch's going to come along and ruin the Wall Street Journal really depends on which side of the Wall Street Journal you're talking about, because in many respects, it may be that Rupert Murdoch is actually a bit to the left of the editorial side of the Wall Street Journal, and that's something that people don't seem to be recognizing in terms of the effects of the journal on American political and public life.
Robert McChesney, what about it? If the journal's editorial page, where they write that, you know, where the op-ed columns are and where the editorials are written, if that's already very conservative, does it matter less if a fairly conservative mogul comes in to own the whole thing, including the news side?
Perhaps, but I think that really is orthogonal to the real issues involved here. And I think the real concern has to be, and I think why the journalists are concerned at the Wall Street Journal and people who love journalism and care about journalism are concerned worldwide, is one, the Fox News effect, not just of partisanship, but of slashing editorial budgets dramatically, because that's the surest short route. I'm not saying it's a long-term route of success, but in the near term, it's the surest way to up your revenues, increase your profits, is to lower your editorial budgets. And that's what Fox News has done brilliantly. You replace journalists with pontificators. And the other factor that we have to be concerned about is that Rupert Murdoch's news properties worldwide have shown a strong propensity to use the power of the press to advance his political agenda and political issues. And that's been done everywhere. And I think even if the Wall Street Journal remains the same type of newspaper, it's been a business paper for the upper class primarily, or upper middle class primarily, it's not going to become sensationalistic. That's not really the concern. But the fear is that he will be more aggressive in having the editorial content, not just the editorial pages, be shaped in such a way as to promote his very strong political interests. And I think that's a real concern for everyone.
We've got the Wall Street Journal's China Bureau also shipping a letter off pleading for this not to happen. They won the Pulitzer Prize for international reporting this year. They write, News Corp Chairman Rupert Murdoch has a well-documented history of making editorial decisions, and by that they mean in the news pages here, in order to advance his business interests in China, and indeed of sacrificing journalistic integrity to satisfy personal or political aims. Zachary, you say it's just the evolution, the way of the world, but this isn't just anybody. It is Murdoch.
You know, I'm going to sidestep that for a moment. One of the better parallels I've read in the past couple of weeks about this was the acquisition of The New Yorker by Cy Newhouse in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And the concern that went up that the long-standing kind of in maverick independence of The New Yorker would be highly compromised by Cy Newhouse and Condé Nast, or what was then an earlier version of Condé Nast. And, you know, it's certainly true that when Newhouse came in, Wallace Shawn went out, and some of the great examples of sort of non-commercial, high-culture journalism definitely disappeared from The New Yorker, and Tina Brown came in and commercialized the whole thing. But I think many people feel that today, at least under David Remnick, that The New Yorker, as both a commercial, it's actually making money for the first time in its history, and an editorial entity, is a vastly better product. Now, history doesn't replay itself exactly the same way. You know, it rhymes, it doesn't repeat. So there's no way of saying that example is going to play out with Rupert Murdoch and the Wall Street Journal. I would take exception with Professor McChesney's the surest way to profitability. I mean, Rupert Murdoch is not bidding $60 a share or thereabouts, i.e. double the current market value of a money-losing entity in order to come in and slash costs, per se, because that doesn't get him to where presumably he would want to be. You know, the issue of does he then change it a la Fox News and create a more, I guess, pontificating versus reporting, you know, there too, there is a very strong editorial budget and content of the Wall Street Journal, but there are three other sections as well as a weekend section that are largely devoted to business coverage and cultural coverage and things that are not what we would call hard news. So if anything, you could imagine that being augmented rather than slashed, because it's already a fractional portion of the Wall Street Journal. There's also Dow Jones in general, which we haven't even been talking about.
Right. And of course, there's the New Yorker experience and Cy Newhouse buying that to look at, as you say, Joe Nocera noting that in the New York Times. But on the other hand, that's Cy Newhouse, and here we've got Rupert Murdoch. Here's one more letter from Dan Golden, Deputy Bureau Chief of the Boston Bureau of the Wall Street Journal, Pulitzer Prize winner. He says that he won a Pulitzer for reporting a series of articles on white affirmative action that criticized business executives and other affluent Americans for buying their children's way into elite colleges with well-timed donations. He says that the Wall Street Journal's willingness to feature his articles was a tribute to the paper's integrity, its commitment to excellence, and the firewall it maintains between news and opinion. And then this Pulitzer Prize winner writes, based on Rupert Murdoch's history with other newspapers, I'm deeply concerned that if he were to acquire the Journal, he would erode these traditions and use news coverage to advance his own agenda. He's pleading with the Bancroft family not to do it, but they're sitting down with Rupert Murdoch today. Let's hear from our listeners. Kate's calling from North Attleboro, Massachusetts. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to reiterate Professor McChesney's point about the consolidation of coverage of news. The fact that Rupert Murdoch is interested in buying the Wall Street Journal again condenses news that fewer and fewer hands are reporting the same stories. I believe in Iraq right now we only have 3 news bureaus that are covering the war. And I think if you were to use that example and to look at the differences of opinion between whether the surge is working, the surge is not working, we have very few voices that are coming out there and saying what is actually happening to the people that are in Iraq.
So concentration concerns you, but let me put the same question, Kate. Does it matter if in that concentration it's Rupert Murdoch's hands on this one or not?
Yes, it does matter to me tremendously. I feel that Murdoch has an agenda. He has an agenda he wants to promote. And that agenda, I agree. I think he's going to have great difficulty keeping his hands off news so that we have just news. I'm afraid we're back to the era of yellow journalism. That may be very unfair on my part, but that's what I see in his newspapers.
Kate, thanks very much for your call. Let's get another here from Hartford, Connecticut. Daniel's on the line. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air. What do you think?
Thank you for taking the call, Tom. I think that I'm really surprised to hear all this talk of independence and the independence of the Wall Street Journal. I think that they are basically the mouthpiece for the elite ruling class in this country. This is an editorial board which has defended torture, continues to defend the war, is pro-open border, excuses Israeli war crimes. I mean, Tom, they defended Scooter Libby to the very end.
But isn't that the American newspapering tradition on the editorial page? In your editorial, say whatever you like, but be straight up when it comes to the news pages.
Well, I'd say that they're not straight up, because let me tell you, recently, Tom, one thing that wasn't covered is a meeting called the Bilderberg meeting, which just happened in Istanbul, Turkey. Now, the Wall Street Journal was represented by Paul Gigot, who is the editor of the editorial pages, and Paul Gigot did not write about his attendance at the Bilderberg meeting, where 120 of the world's top CEOs, industrialists, and bankers get together to craft world policy. Furthermore, many different representatives of the Wall Street Journal have attended the Bilderberg meeting.
There's no question at the editorial page level, there's a lot of hand in glove and a lot of back and forth, but then there is the line, and it's the other side people seem to be really concerned about. But your point taken, Daniel. Let me get one more here. Bill from Concord, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I've done some business with the Murdoch television operations in the UK and in China, and lived in London for 20 years when the Times was undergoing its transformation. I think there's no doubt that Murdoch has a single agenda, but the agenda really is to build his business empire. And I think, as always lately in American media, it's come down to money. The Bancrofts are going to take the $60 a share, even though they're incredibly wealthy already. They want more money. And Murdoch's played to that, and he's going to control this and use it to advance his business interests.
But building business interests is the American, and I guess now the Australian way, is it not? I mean, is that so weird and wild?
I don't think it was in the course of our history of journalism. I don't think it was. I don't think it is with the Financial Times. I don't think it is with the Wall Street Journal. I don't think it is with the New York Times.
So you're worried about his impact on the product itself, not just that he owns it.
It's just business, and he'll use the news pages to advance his business interests.
Bill, thanks very much for your call. I want to welcome one more voice into this conversation from Lawrenceville, New Jersey. We're joined by Steve Yount. He's president of the Independent Association of Publishers Employees. They represent 2,000 Dow Jones employees, including reporters and editors. Steve, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. So much to cover and so little time to do it.
Absolutely. The future business-wise of the jobs of your union members, is that your number one interest here? And is that advanced or diminished by this?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The number one interest that I have and the number one interest that the union has is the continued independence, editorial independence, and the unquestioned integrity of the Wall Street Journal. And I think that the scope of this debate is important because you're getting calls from Massachusetts. This is the Wall Street Journal. You're undoubtedly hearing from people in Madison, Wisconsin, in Omaha, Nebraska, in Salt Lake City. We're not talking about just another newspaper that might move into the column of ownership by Rupert Murdoch. We're talking about one of the last 3 great newspapers in this country, arguably one of only 2 national newspapers in this country. And it is a paper right now that if you read it in the Wall Street Journal, aside from the editorial page, which everybody knows exactly what you're going to get, aside from the editorial page, you read something in the Wall Street Journal, you take it for fact. You don't think that there is an agenda. You don't think that we're protecting someone's corporate interest. That is the news. We won a Pulitzer Prize for the coverage of the industrial changes in China. I will guarantee you that if Rupert Murdoch owned the Wall Street Journal, that story never would have appeared.
But is this special pleading, Steve? I mean, businesses all over the world are being bounced around by new technology and trends and globalization. The media business, for heaven's sakes, all kinds of buyouts and change going on there. You've only got a 3% return at Dow Jones. Maybe.
Wait a second. That's not the issue. We're not talking about globalization. We're not talking about an Australian-born publisher. Those are not issues here.
Well, they may be, because he may be able to put this price forward because he's going to use the Wall Street Journal's news more effectively globally than Dow Jones has, perhaps.
There is, Tom, there's nothing wrong with the global or effective reach of the Wall Street Journal. I mean, this is a national newspaper. There is nothing wrong with the Wall Street Journal. There is no pressing need to sell Dow Jones. We're not running out of money. We're not working at a deficit. They're turning this thing around.
Why do you think the Bancroft family is sitting down with Rupert Murdoch today, then?
If they're talking about a 3% return, which one of your earlier guests talked about, and they bemoan the fact that we're not getting the 20 to 40% return that we used to get. Well, I don't think that there's a newspaper in this country or in this world that's going to get a 40% return on its investment. That just isn't going to happen anymore. But there's nothing wrong with a 7% or 10%, which is certainly within reason of what can be done, and I think is being done by Dow Jones as a company. Newspaper business is in tough times now, and there's no doubt about that with declining revenue.
Zachary Carabel, let me turn to you for a moment. Steve Yount says there is nothing wrong with the business that's going on at Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal, so back off, Rupert.
Well, I don't know if that's really true, and I think, in fact, the Wall Street Journal, and in particular the Dow Jones wire service side of it, which is, you know, a large portion of this that we don't talk about because it's not as sexy and it's not as noticeable, but it's a lot of journalists doing beat reporting, often on a business angle, but throughout markets throughout the world.
And competing with Bloomberg and Thomson and Reuters and all of them.
Right. So, I mean, that's a major area of the Dow Jones business model. The other side of it is, for all of the marquee value of the journal, in a world of expanding media consumption, they have not really been able to keep up. They certainly have not maximized their online presence. They've had a for-pay model, which has been, in a lot of ways, limited their reach, although it's kept up their revenues, and that's been a major issue. And
I can't believe that. It was one of only two companies that is actually making money off the internet. This is
no,
a
I'm
model.
Saying it's augmenting their revenues.
The,
you're totally right.
The New
right.
York Times and all of the other newspapers that have gone online went with a free model, and they have lost money, and they are in desperate straits. The Wall Street Journal at least had the idea that their content was worth something, and so people paid for it.
No, but you're totally right. They're making money because they're having a pay-for model on content, but the price point
of
that content
is what drives this entire company. It drives the journal print-wise. It drives Dow Jones Newswires, Barron's, Smart Money, everything else that we have. Content is what Murdoch wants to buy, and that is the value this company has.
Well, content
and
plus prestige plus power, Steve Yount, I know I have to let you go in a second. I mean, this is a conversation we may only get to have once. Once it's sold, it's sold. Is this a done deal? And if not, what's your word at this point to the Bancroft family?
Oh, it's absolutely not a done deal. The union, in fact, is involved in a number of discussions with a number of potential investors that we're trying to put together some alternatives for the Bancroft family. The union believes, and this is a reflection of the reporters who are involved in all the daily coverage of this, the union believes that the best course of action is a continued stewardship by the Bancroft family of the Wall Street Journal and Dow Jones. Now, failing that, if the family does believe that this is the time to sell, then we want the opportunity to sit down with some potential investors and put together alternatives.
Who else is out there who's got that kind of cash and would pay that kind of premium?
Oh, come on, Tom. You can come up with a list of five or six people right off the top of your head that can write a check for $5 billion, and if you put together a consortium of two or three of those billionaires, you can probably double that list.
Still, that's not chump change on anybody's scale of money. Do you see anyone actually stepping up to offer as big a bid, or would it be a lower bid but close enough that the Bancrofts might turn to it?
I don't want to try to characterize exactly how the financing would go or what combination of investors But yes, I believe that there are people out there that feel deeply about this and realize that this is not a money-losing proposition. And I know that Warren Buffett made a comment on Charlie Rose in the middle of May. He said that you have to realize that this is more than just a newspaper we're talking about. This is like the New York Yankees are more than a baseball team, even with the terrible year the Yankees are having with the Red Sox this year. Yeah. It's more than just owning a baseball team. Owning the Wall Street Journal is more than just owning a newspaper. There are only two newspapers in this country, perhaps three, that carry that kind of cachet. The Times, the Journal, and the Washington Post. Those are national, prestigious journals. And there are people that have that kind of money and that kind of commitment that they are willing to step up.
Now, and if it goes, there's cachet, but there's also the news it delivers. If it goes to Murdoch, what do you fear goes with it?
Oh, I think the unquestioned integrity of the coverage. I think that's immediately and forever thrown into doubt.
Steve Yount, he heads the Independent Association of Publishers Employees, representing 2,000 Dow Jones employees. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Certainly.
Let's go to Kevin in Fall River, Massachusetts. Kevin, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wish Steve well on his efforts. I've subscribed to for years, and I'm going to end my subscription if this goes through.
Why?
They're polar opposites. The Wall Street Journal has got good, solid, independent news that you can't get elsewhere. And Fox News, there was a University of Maryland study before the last election, and there was a strong, strong, clear correlation between people believing things that just were not true about weapons of mass destruction, Hussein having attacked us, and Al-Qaeda-Iraq connection, and they're having been being relying on Fox News for their main source of information.
So he buys it and you're gone. You say, Kevin, thanks for your call. Let's get one more from Chris in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Look, I'm not a regular reader of the Wall Street Journal. I buy it occasionally, but I can tell you the day this deal goes through, the brand name, the Wall Street Journal, will have been devalued immensely because Rupert Murdoch, the worldwide deal maker, can you ever trust the Wall Street Journal to honestly report on any Rupert Murdoch deals anymore? What it does say or doesn't say, and if it says, and you know, the wall.
They've been reporting very vigorously on the Bancroft's conversations with,
With Murdoch, it's not going to be the same thing. Rupert Murdoch's not going to let the Wall Street Journal hurt him in the pocketbook. You know that. Does anyone believe that he's not going to interfere with the way the Wall Street Journal reports on his deals, the deals of his friends, and what goes on in China? I'm sorry. I just don't have any confidence that Rupert Murdoch will be an honest owner.
And pretty soon you're talking half the world that might not be covered practically there. Chris, thanks for that. Let's take a call from Toronto, Canada. Arthur, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Excellent show, as always.
Thank you.
My question is, Rupert, everybody's talking about what agenda Rupert Murdoch brings when he buys Dow Jones Company, but he's not a young guy. My question is, what your panel thinks about what is going to happen sort of beyond Rupert Murdoch's lifespan, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay, let us look at that. I think he's 76 or something like that, Zachary.
He's 76.
Famously, his mother lived well into her 90s, and I've read that he desires and plans to also. There's been talk about succession, but no sign that Rupert Murdoch's going away anytime soon.
No, but it's a very good point, and one I was actually going to make, and that this deal will outlive Rupert Murdoch, should it go through. And there is a long-term picture here of media consolidation on the one hand and media disaggregation on the other, because people still talk about these marquee papers, the Wall Street Journal, the Times of London, the New York Times, the Washington Post, as the be-all and end-all of journalism. And it's clear from the Internet and the web, while it certainly does not yet command the resources that a news bureau covers, that it does in fact fill in a lot of things that traditional media is not. An earlier caller talked about the absolute disappearance of traditional news bureau coverage in Iraq. But there have been a number of online endeavors that create a much better information flow. And a lot of that is not because major businesses are deciding that Iraq is not a place they want to be. It's that individual journalists with healthcare plans and lives are finding it legitimately a far too dangerous place to report from, and the amount of coverage to protect them is huge. Whereas stringers or individuals, you know, the old-time kind of journalist who went into the middle of the war zone is much more willing to do so individually and online. And the larger point here being this is not the only place that journalism and news exists. And I think the conversation acts as if that were the case.
Robert McChesney, how about it?
I would disagree pretty strongly with what Zachary just said, not in the sense that there isn't all sorts of exciting blogging and independent journalism sprouting on the web, but the idea that that compensates for newsrooms with resources to pay reporters to actually get out and cover stuff, with institutional support to cover reporters if they antagonize anyone in power, I don't think there's any evidence that what's emerging so far is remotely sufficient to replace what we've lost. I mean, the research we've seen, and this predates the internet, by the way, going back 20 years, shows a decline in the number of working journalists in city after city in this country as we've had media consolidation. There's simply something in the case of Philadelphia, I think 40% fewer working journalists today covering the community than there were 25 years ago.
Is that even if you include bloggers and so on, or do you not count them?
No, you're not. But, I mean, it's one thing if you're a blogger and you're working a day job in a coal mine, you take care of kids, you do your laundry, and you sit down at 11 o'clock to blog on the world. And it's another thing if you do it for a living and you have the time to do it. Blog, you know, what we're talking about are people who actually have the resources and support to do journalism. You know, blogging's fine, but you've got to blog on top of something. You've got to have a melody to improvise off of. And what we're losing are the melody makers. Those are the journalists. And that's not being magically replaced by the internet. That requires resources and institutions. And that is really the real story that underscores this, is that we're seeing a shrinking in journalism. And I think the anxiety that so many of the callers have, that so many working journalists have, and so many people not connected to this purely as a business story, what's going to make the most money for this investor, that investor, are deeply concerned that this is simply making a bad situation worse and not really getting us toward a solution that's really satisfactory for a free society.
We read a number of Wall Street Journal reporters expressing the notion that this is bad for democracy. I mean, how do you see the stakes here? I mean, is it that fundamental?
Well, this one story in and of itself isn't necessarily the tipping point, but I think, as I said, it's part of a broad trend of a decline of resources going to journalists and having viable, strong, healthy, well newsrooms with well-paid journalists with protection from government and other commercial harassment that should deeply alarm us. Because as the callers have pointed out, and I think people understand, you can't have self-government without a really strong, viable press system. And our founders knew this. They had no confidence of just turning over the press system to wealthy individuals would be satisfactory. That's why they instituted a number of enormous subsidies to spawn a much richer print media than would have existed otherwise. As a society, we've got to revisit this question. We've got to say, if we need journalism, what's it going to take to make sure we have competing newsrooms in each community, to make sure we have really great newsrooms covering the world, like the Wall Street Journal newsroom is. It's in our interest that it's not just a business story. There are what economists call externalities. And if we turn it into purely a business story and think of it that way, we might be, you know, losing everything. And by the time we realize it, it's going to be too late.
Let's go to Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Barbara. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Hi. Well, I'm thinking that I can't understand why everybody talks about worrying that Rupert Murdoch buying the Wall Street Journal will taint their objectivity, as though the New York Times and the Washington Post are the gold standard and they are 100% objective and report the news pure. I really think that that's not true. I think they have tremendous bias, and I think they make lots of what I consider to be mistakes in their reporting and in their editorials.
So you think we already live in a world of bias, overt or subtle, and so it doesn't matter if Murdoch buys the Journal or not?
Well, I do think we live in a world that has a lot of bias in the journalism and media, and although there's lots of things on the Fox News channel that I don't like, I do think that they have started expressing opinions and ideas and reporting things to the general American public that never were reported before and are never reported anywhere else that I do think are true and worth hearing and worth knowing about. And so I don't see it as some terrible bias that's coming to an objective newspaper. I think that they can be objective too, and having different viewpoints is a good idea.
So bring it on. The more, the merrier there in that perspective. Barbara, thanks for that. Let's get one more from Potsdam, New York. AJ, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to just sort of say that with Mr. Murdoch, I think it speaks for itself when he created the Fox News division and put a former Republican committee chairman, Mr. Ailes, in charge.
But our caller in Virginia Beach, Barbara, says that's a valuable new perspective. Everybody's got one, so why not have Murdoch's too?
Well, with respect to the New York Times, when they had numerous issues with reportage, they reported on themselves. They created an ombudsman, a public editor, and aired their dirty laundry on the front page. Finally, I would suggest that there's a cinematic way to look at this, and that would be the prescient 1976 classic film Network, which paints a pretty bleak future of media in general. That was the broadcast, of course, but by extension, print journalism. You can also look at a 1950s Bogart classic called Deadline USA. I'm not sure if it's available, but it shows up on some of the television stations.
And the heart of the theater that you see playing out here, AJ?
Say again, please?
And the heart of the theater you see playing out here, then, if this has got some cinematic resonance, what's the heart of the story you see being played out?
That news has become infotainment rather than information-based. Keep them distracted, throw them a few jokes, and meanwhile we underreport or misreport and tell you what we want you to think rather than what is observable reality.
There's the fear. Let's get one more from Kannapolis, North Carolina. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment kind of based off your last caller's comment that, you know, if Murdoch does acquire the Wall Street Journal, a lot of people in this country would be happy because they get their news solely from Fox News and they believe everything they hear on Fox News, where I, on the other hand, will not watch Fox News because I feel like it's shifted so much to the right, just the other wing of the Republican Party.
So you're not prepared to tune in there, but it may, you fear, bleed into the journal itself. Who knows? Mark, thanks for that call. Zachary, how do you see the odds of this deal happening? You heard Steve Yount say they're going to propose alternative buyers if the Bancrofts really get ready to sell. Do you see real alternatives?
Steve's totally right that there are a lot of other potential credible buyers, and this price tag in the world of private equity is actually not particularly steep.
Mm-hmm.
There certainly are none currently on the horizon, and given the premium that Murdoch's been willing to pay, you have to think that there's a better than even likelihood that the deal will go through. I think on the non-economic point, and this is just one to keep in mind, and I know I've made with you before, Tom, which is that this notion that as goes the Wall Street Journal or the mainstream print media, so goes the health of American democracy is one that is really, in my view, overstated. And you can only look back to the turn of the 20th century, an era where what we now know as yellow journalism was rampant, but is also a time with the progressive era and reforms and high levels of political debate and participation and lots of other avenues as opposed to just the McCormick Tribune and the Pulitzer papers and the Hearst papers, where there were a lot of other outlets and voices. And I think there is a parallel today with the internet and blogs, and it's not a one-to-one, meaning as mainstream media recedes in terms of content, it doesn't mean that there's an equal and opposite immediate reaction. So Professor McChesney is totally right that there hasn't, that gap has yet to be filled, or that vacuum has yet to be filled. But there's a lot going on here other than this particular deal and this particular issue, and I think we do ourselves a disservice to both ignore these changes, assume that democracy needs a Wall Street Journal owned by the Bancrofts, and that to me is just a rather silly point, and not look at these changes are happening regardless of whether Murdoch buys the Wall Street Journal or not.
Robert McChesney, last word goes to you. Zachary Karabell says, you know, we made it through big change before. We made it through yellow journalism's heyday. We'll make it through this. What do you say?
Well, we'll make it through this if we as a people, you know, deal with it and enact policies. I think if we leave it just to the market, I mean, we might make it through it, but it's also the same as you're driving 100 miles an hour on a road and you don't know if there's a cliff at the end. There's no logical reason to think we will get through this and get to a place where we're at all satisfactory if we don't do anything. I think we have a society, and I think as a government, we've got to consider, do we want journalism? What's it going to take? And study it. Maybe Zachary's right. Maybe all the bloggers are going to come together and just blow our minds working for free or figure out somehow to make money 10, 20, 30 years down the road. I don't see that on right now, and I don't want to roll the dice. I think the free press is a little too important to take chances like that with.
Well, the whole world watching as Rupert Murdoch and the Bancrofts talk about the future of The Wall Street Journal, and we're grateful for your insights on that today. Zachary Carabell at Fred Alger Management in New York, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And Robert McChesney, Professor of Communications at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Bob, thanks a lot for being here.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.